Welcome to the Mint Euro Special 2016 podcast. Over the next 30 days, Ankit Prasad will take you through some of the most exciting happenings from on and off the football field.
Hello and welcome to European Nights, a show about football. Today is Saturday, the 25th of June, and I'm Ankit Prasad. We were off yesterday, as you may no doubt have noticed, but that was because there was no football. The longest group stage in European Championships history had ended and we were transitioning into the knockout round, which kicks off today and we're enormously excited about. But, I guess it's begging to be said. Oh, Europe, look what you've done. The football was on a break for one day. Now there's going to be hell to pay. The Europeans aren't going to be happy with the UK for flipping them the bird. And let's face it, the UK isn't too happy with itself either. It's like a lover spat that just got serious. Someone's done something and they cannot take it back, and they deservedly feel a little ashamed. At this point in time, all indications are that it's just the beginning. Exiting the EU is a long and arduous process, and it involves a negotiation of what the exiting country's new relation and equation to the EU will be. And if the Britons feel that they're still going to get themselves a good deal, then they've got another thing coming. But there is a solution. There is a way to get the nasty bits of the breakup done with early and move on to becoming friends sooner. And of course, that involves football. For the first time ever, we're pretty sure there are four British nations in the knockout stage of a major football tournament. And yes, we know that the Republic of Ireland is not a part of the UK per se, but really, who are they kidding? There's four of them and there are 12 others from the mainland. And so now is the best chance they're ever going to have to duke it out and let the animosity of this whole Brexit situation work itself off with what the Europeans, all Europeans, have been best at for all these years, and that is kicking the shins off each other over a long summery football tournament. These Euros have assumed a much greater significance than before, and it's more than just about bragging rights now. It's about being right. If a British nation manages to win the championships, then are they not vindicated? If England can end 50 years of hurt after 43 years of being in the EU, then is that not cause and effect? If Wales win them, then surely it must mean that they have the greatest footballer in Europe at the moment. And if any of the Irish teams manage to do so, then we'll never hear the end of it, will we? Of course, as far as the home nations' chances go, Europe hasn't done them any favours. Wales will play Northern Ireland tonight, so there's a quarter of the challenge gone. But on the other hand, watch out Belgium and Hungary, because at least one of them is going to be coming for you next. These European Championships just got an added dimension, and just for that, it's all worth it. So let's forget about the plunging stocks and Cameron resigning and what the boffins at the EU think and all of that. Because the football's here now, and that's what matters. So there are 15 matches to go in this largest European Championships knockout ever, and we're going to be looking ahead to each one of them. This first stage that begins tonight is being played in rather a hurry. There are 3 matches tonight, 3 tomorrow, and 2 on Monday. But post that, there's only ever going to be one a night, which means that we had better enjoy these as much as possible. 3 knockout games a night is more excitement than should be allowed, and let's look at what we've got coming up. First, at 6:30 PM Indian time, from Saint Etienne and Lestage Geoffrey Guichard, we have Poland taking on Switzerland, and in itself, that's a EU versus non-EU battle. Switzerland are not a European Union nation, and as far as Brexit is concerned, that was a huge deal. Switzerland has a titanic economy for a country its size, and the manner in which it has made the most of not being a part of the EU played a big part in the Eurosceptics' arguments. The UK wants to emulate the Swiss's success, and in that way there's a chance for them to serve as a guiding light for England, Wales and the Irelands once again. Unfortunately, they haven't exactly set this tournament on fire just yet. The Swiss have some good players, that's for sure. We knew all about Jadran Shaqiri going in, but just like in the rest of his career so far, he's been a bit of a disappointment. When Shaqiri was bursting through at Basel, there was a huge excitement about him. He was a short and stubby left-footed winger, and that never fails to get people excited in football. He was dubbed the Swiss Maradona, and while that sort of comparison has hurt just about every player in history except for Messi, Shaqiri did quite well to start off with, a fact evidenced by his move to a very powerful Bayern Munich side in 2012. At Bayern, he was only an occasional starter, mostly because Shaqiri is, while left-footed, predominantly a modern, unorthodox winger. He plays on the right side, and that means that his party trick has to be cutting infield from his wing and threatening the opposition goal with hard left-footed shots from outside the box and curling crosses into the keeper's far post, and that put him in direct competition with almost the greatest exponent of that art, Arjen Robben. Now, we're not going to see it here, and that's a crying shame, but Robben Onsong is probably the most dangerous footballer on the planet. He struts all of his stuff at full tilt and has a beast of a shot, probably the most dangerous left foot in the world. In the big matches, he's every bit as dangerous as Messi, and so for Shaqiri to take him on directly was always going to be a difficult task. Fortunately for him, and unfortunately for Robben, the latter has a long record of injury, and that allowed Shaqiri a decent amount of game time, and he made the most of it. In his 3 seasons there, he scored 17 goals in 81 appearances, many of which were from off the bench, and that's quite good for a young winger. However, in the same period, Robben scored 53 goals in just 105 matches, and also managed to remain fit for a good amount of time, and so Shaqiri saw his game time decreasing. 3 years after coming to Munich, and at the age of 22, he decided to take his barrel chest and scuttly feet to Milan and Inter, and it didn't work out so well there. But while at Bayern, Shaqiri had had a taste of real success, as he was a part of the side that won the treble in 2012-2013. There comes a time in every young player's career when they look at the quantity and quality of the football that they're playing, and doubtlessly Shaqiri did a few such calculations before deciding to move away from the cavernous 80,000-seater cathedral of football that is the San Siro to the Britannia Stadium in cold and rainy Stoke at the start of the Premier League season that just ended. At Stoke, Shaqiri was expected to dovetail with Bojan Krkic, also a player who had emerged as a talented teenager at Barcelona no less, and had to suffer the inevitable comparisons with Messi. It's probably fair to say that the Potters, led by another former Barcelona and Bayern Munich player, Mark Hughes, who is nonetheless best remembered for his 2 stints at Manchester United, did rather alright this season, finishing 9th, though both Shaqiri and Bojan, and also Ibrahim Afellay, another talented journeyman, will feel that next year they can do better. For Shaqiri, it all begins here at the European Championships. It's a chance to live up to his early potential. He has the skill and he has the support cast. Granit Xhaka and Gemayli notwithstanding, Switzerland's defence has also proved to be quite adept at getting forward. Fabian Scher is dangerous from set pieces, and Lichtsteiner, Joru and Ricardo Rodriguez are also more than adept. However, as 3 of those 4 who play in Germany will tell you, they're not going to have it easy against Poland. While Switzerland had France to contend with in their group, the Poles had the world champions Germany, and still at the end of the group stage, the two were neck and neck in terms of points. While Switzerland have the Shaqiris and the Xhakas, who will doubtlessly attempt to set Europe alight in the next couple of seasons, Poland have a player who has already done so and is at the peak of his powers. Robert Lewandowski is 27 and has had a phenomenal season. In fact, in terms of goal scoring, he's had 5 on the bounce. Lewandowski can be properly said to have it all. He's slender and balanced and quick, has a great first touch, and does fantastic stuff with his feet when he receives the ball in the box. In fact, Lewandowski may just be the best player in the world in terms of being able to create a yard of space and getting a shot away. His coordination when he does this is a joy to watch, and the fact that he's yet to hit his stride in this tournament is a dangerous thing. The Polish captain isn't one to go without scoring for too long. 3 games is ridiculous, frankly, and there's no doubt that he's due a big one. What's even more emboldening for Poland is that despite him remaining goalless, they've done rather well so far. Arkadiusz Milik has scored 47 goals in 2 seasons at Ajax, and he's only 22. He's already bagged 1 in France and has created his side's other goal with a skillful corner routine. And then there's all the others like Krajcowiak, Kapuczka and Blasikowski, who are as much a nightmare for commentators as they are for opposing defenders. Both these sides have tons of quality, and unlike when 2 unheralded European nations generally meet, this is not likely to be a damp squib of an encounter. We can expect goals, and then we can also expect that to score them, the attackers will have to do rather well. We're predicting a tight and technical encounter until the first goal is scored, but then the floodgates could open. The longer it goes, the better Poland's chances become, and we're tipping them to win 2-1. Okay, now for the second match of the night, we'll change tact. At 9:30 PM, Wales will play Northern Ireland in Paris, and though both sides have tons of history in the home nations championship, this is the first time that this kind of matchup has been possible at a major tournament. It's all kinds of historic, and to discuss the match, we're going to instead get a pair of guests. And these guests are a bit special, because if there's a list of the greatest players in history to have never played in a major tournament, you're likely to find these two right at the very top. They're also a pair of Manchester United legends and two of the most exciting wingers in the history of the British game, Ryan Giggs of Wales and the late George Best of Northern Ireland. Best. Tally-ho, Giggsy, how are you, lad? Apparently, and I can't vouch for the authenticity of this information, mostly because most of it comes from people's prayers, and you know what people pray for, all kinds of things, but it appears that our two countries are going to be playing against each other in the European Championships. Now, by Johnny Walker, what's all that about? Surely you didn't have anything to do with that, did ya? Because that would violate the contract we signed about you being my successor. Remember, you were allowed to play at Old Trafford, make defenders look a bit silly, win lots of pots and all that, but the summer was for getting a bit of sun on a beach somewhere and getting a bit naughty. Surely you haven't violated those terms now, have you, Giggsy? Giggs. Bestie, you old fart. First of all, I never signed any such agreement. That was just you prattling on something incoherent with a flute or two of champagne in your hand, which if you'll remember, you were rather known for doing. But, in a way, you are right. Yes, I did make defenders look a bit silly, and of course I won more trophies than anyone else ever will, and let's not even talk about getting naughty. But that's not me playing at the Euros. I'm retired now. An old man, some would say. Best. Ah, I'm not sure I'm entirely pleased to hear that. You getting retired and being old isn't something I'd ever envisioned. In any case, I'm sure you could still turn a couple of defenders inside out if you wanted to. But I suppose everything has to end sometime, doesn't it? Well, anyway, tell me about this match. Round of 16, I hear. And be quick, I'm using John Lennon's phone. He'll tell you to imagine there's no possession, but he's awfully touchy about his stuff. Giggs. Well, Wales are favourite, and I'm not having you on when I say this. Wales have got a really good team for once, and you're not going to believe this. The best player is a winger. It's a lad called Gareth Bale, and he's left-footed, thunders down the pitch like a horse, and can hit a shot, I'll tell you that. Even plays for Real Madrid. Can you believe that? I'm not gone 3 years and they're already telling me that I'm not the best left-winger Wales has ever had. But they have others too. This chap called Ramsey, he can play a bit, and if the North let him have the ball, he'll skewer them. They've got a couple of players too, mind, the North, but it's more thunder and guts and heart and sinew than real skill. And again, I'm not having you on. There's a chap called Will Grigg, which we've all been dying to see, but he's not played yet. He's got his own song and everything, but they're going to get beaten tonight, you mark my words. Wales have got this one spread on toast. Best. Ah, well, if you say so, though you probably won't mind then if I ask a friend of mine, who I've been teaching to play a bit, for some divine intervention. Maybe God can do his thing. What do you say? Score draw? One all? Penalties? Well, I'm going to try. All right, Giggsy, old chap. Have a good one. Cheerio. And that brings us neatly to the main event of the night. At 12:30 from the Stade Bolat Delailis in Lens, Portugal will meet Croatia. This is almost definitely the most exciting encounter of one side of the knockout chart and features probably the two most exciting teams in this competition so far. Croatia dominated Turkey, saw their fans committing harakiri against the Czech Republic, and then did the unthinkable by becoming the first side to defeat double defending European champion Spain since Portugal themselves beat their Iberian neighbours in Lisbon in 2004. Beating Spain, and that too without their main midfield dynamo Luka Modric, is an incredible achievement, even despite the fact that Spain had looked lackluster and keeper David De Gea appeared to have left his concentration back at home in Manchester. Their main weapon is their midfield, which can both outplay and outscore opponents. Perisic, Kalinic, Brozovic and Rakitic, along with captain Dario Serna, are utterly uncompromising footballers. Their experiences so far will ensure that they fear no one in this competition. And if Modric is fit, that's the whole package right there. If there is a chink in Croatia's armour, however, it's their main striker Mario Mandzukic. It's inconceivable that coach Ante Kasic will drop Kalinic after the Fiorentina man's match winner against Spain, a game Mandzukic missed because of injury. But even if he has an inkling, perhaps he should dunk his head in some cold water. Mandzukic is a centre-forward in the old-fashioned mould, and that's because he really has very little choice in the matter. He lumbers around and is limited by his mobility, and while Croatia get enough crosses and he does hold the ball up enough to be a legitimate goal-scoring threat, what's going to be required against Portugal is fleet-footedness and quick countering ability. This is a highly intriguing tactical encounter. Portugal, while ostensibly being outmatched in midfield, are nonetheless more than competent. João Moutinho was considered as a replacement for Modric at Tottenham, and though the deal didn't materialize, there's no doubting that he shares several of the same qualities. Also, Portugal will surround him with a couple of defensive midfielders and also potentially the pint-sized battering ram that is Renato Sanchez. And up front, we know what they're all about. Shots, shots and more shots. Ronaldo and Nani are incorrigible. Either one of them will take a shot every 5 minutes and both are on the cusp of landmarks. Ronaldo needs one more to equal Michel Platini as the Euro's all-time leading goalscorer. He has 8 goals so far, having scored in 4 consecutive tournaments, another record. Nani is going to be making his 100th appearance for Portugal, and along with Ricardo Quaresma, who will most likely come off the bench at some point, they are the most fun to watch attacking side in these championships. Now, of course, the footballing world seems to like nothing more than to see Portugal suffer. They're the pantomime villains of most such stories, but the best thing about them is that they simply don't care. All they want to do is score as many goals as possible, and we take that any day of the week. If there is a weak link in this whole game, it's Portugal's defense, which the word creaky doesn't even begin to describe. Ricardo Carvalho is virtually in the afterlife in football terms, and Pepe is Pepe, and there's no bigger tool of self-harm in world football. Versus Hungary, Ronaldo had a fit, as for the third time in the match, an opponent player was allowed too much time and space and managed to get a deflected shot past Rui Patricio. If they allow Rakitic and Modric the same space, they'll get slaughtered. But in Ronaldo and Nani, they always have the capability of scoring just as many, and if the stars align, then the scoreline could be frightening. We're predicting a thriller. If it's not better than 3-2, then both sides should hang their heads in shame. And Portugal to win. And that's it for this episode. The football will begin soon, and it really is all kinds of exciting. We'll be back tomorrow with a lot more, and the European nights will continue. I'm Ankit Prasad, and thank you for listening.